So, yesterday, June 23, 2026, the AI world basically got hit with a massive shockwave.
Yeah, that is definitely one way to put it.
Right. I mean, a San Francisco startup called Kria just dropped their open weight Kria 2 models. We're talking the raw and turbo versions. And they proved that you do not need some, multi-million dollar server farm to generate native 2K
Yeah, and
images.
in just 2 seconds, which
Just
is.
2 seconds. It's wild. So, welcome to the deep dive. Our mission today is to break down exactly what happened here. We are going to explore the actual mechanics behind those shocking generation speeds, dissect Kria's highly controversial open but conditional licensing, and really figure out what this means for you.
Exactly. Whether you are, casually generating art on your laptop or if you're running a massive creative agency.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because underneath all the technical jargon, this entire release is fundamentally a battle of control versus chaos. And to really understand why Kria 2 matters, we have to start with the problem of AI slop.
Ah, yes, AI slop. That phrase has certainly taken over the industry over the last couple of years.
It really has.
Is the term for that monotonous, cliched, and just instantly recognizable imagery that's flooding all our feeds right now.
Like the glowing neon cyberpunk cities or those perfectly symmetrical faces.
Right. It's that overly smooth, slightly plastic aesthetic where every single subject somehow has perfect studio lighting, regardless of what your prompt was. You look at it and your brain immediately flags it as synthetic.
And if you're a brand trying to maintain a distinct visual identity, relying on older tools like Midjourney or DALL-E is a massive liability. You just end up looking like a clone of your competitors. But I want to understand the actual mechanism here. Why does every major model eventually converge on that exact same plastic look?
It really comes down to a concept called overalignment.
Okay.
The creators of traditional models are basically trying to control the total chaos of the internet's image data to make sure their system reliably produces images that are, generally pleasing and safe for a mass audience. They aggressively train the model toward a centralized house style.
So they're kind of forcing it to play it safe.
Essentially, yes. They punish the model during training for generating anything that's too weird, too dark, or just too unconventional.
Oh, wow.
But Kria 2 is attempting to completely invert that paradigm. They built a 12 billion parameter architecture entirely from scratch, and their primary objective wasn't just high fidelity, but what they call aesthetic diversity.
So they want to give control of the style back to the user rather than forcing a house style on you.
Precisely.
But to fix AI slop, I mean, you can't just tweak the user interface. You have to change the model's diet, like raising a child on a diet of highly processed junk food versus, organic whole foods. If the junk food is synthetic data, you have to feed it real human art to get human results. And Kria's data strategy is pretty radical here.
Radical is definitely the right word. They've implemented a strict zero synthetic data policy.
Not at all.
Zero. And to understand why this is a massive departure from the industry standard, you have to look at how hungry these newer models are. They require such astronomical volumes of training data that many companies they gave up and started feeding their new models the outputs generated by their older AI models.
I've always wondered about the long-term effects of that. I mean, if you feed an AI nothing but artificial images, it seems inevitable that it would just start regurgitating those exact same artificial traits, right?
Yeah, in academia, we actually call that model collapse.
Model collapse. Okay.
Right? When an AI trains on the outputs of another AI, it creates a feedback loop. It starts replicating and amplifying systematic biases. So the nuanced variants of human
Your
photography.
happy accidents.
Exactly. The weird lighting, the unique textures, the grain, it all gets entirely washed out. The model loses its anchor to human reality and completely loses the ability to generate unconventional visual styles.
I understand the theory, but I'm looking at the practical application here. Kria claims zero synthetic data, but the internet in 2026 is completely saturated with AI-generated images. I mean, how do they actually enforce that purity? Do they have like armies of humans reviewing billions of photos?
Oh no, no human workforce could scale to that level. Instead, they built custom automated classifiers based on DynaV3 and SIGGRAPH-2 architectures.
DynaV3 and SIGGRAPH-2.
Think of these classifiers as highly trained visual bouncers at the door of their data center.
I like that.
These architectures are incredibly adept at recognizing the invisible mathematical signatures of synthetic generation. We're talking about microscopic pixel patterns that a human eye misses entirely, but a diffusion model always leaves behind.
Sort of like digital fingerprints.
Exactly. So these bouncers scan the incoming data and immediately purge any image that has synthetic origins.
That makes total sense for keeping the AI slop out. but every model builder filters their data to remove low-quality garbage. The problem I've seen is that those filters often throw out the baby with the bathwater, you know? Like an automated filter might look at a cool avant-garde painting or a photo with intentional motion blur and just delete it because it thinks it's a mistake.
Which brings us to the most elegant piece of their data pipeline. To avoid that exact problem, Kriya utilized a sparse autoencoder, or SAE.
Okay, I'm going to need a translation on that. What is a sparse autoencoder actually doing?
Think of the SAE as an incredibly sophisticated sorting machine. It doesn't judge the vibe of an image. Instead, it breaks it down into individual isolated characteristics. It maps the image into thousands of distinct vectors.
Okay, so it's dissecting it.
Yes.
Yes.
And because it isolated these traits, it can separate a genuine technical defect like, say, digital noise from a cheap camera sensor or heavy JPEG compression artifacts from an artistic choice. It allows Kriya to filter out the corrupted data files without dictating an aesthetic.
Oh, that's smart.
Their technical report put it perfectly. They wrote, "We don't want to tell the model what beautiful is. We only want to remove technical defects and allow a model to learn the full spectrum of visual styles."
I love that philosophy, but I have to play devil's advocate for a second here.
Go for it.
Does relying strictly on pure human data actually translate to a demonstrably better model under the hood? Or is zero synthetic data just a brilliant marketing hook for a community that's totally tired of the AI look?
Well, the data purity is foundational. But it's really only half the equation.
Yeah.
The data dictates the style, sure, but the architecture processing that data is what ultimately dictates the performance. And Kriya's architecture is what allows it to generate images at speeds that are almost difficult to comprehend.
Let's transition to that, because controlling the speed is the second major theme here. We are talking about a 12 billion parameter diffusion transformer. How does this thing actually operate so fast?
The big breakthrough lies in the shift from a multi-stream architecture to a single-stream architecture.
Single stroke.
Right. In older, traditional setups, multi-stream, the text tokens, which are the words in your prompt, and the image tokens, which are the visual data, are processed in completely separate computational pathways.
So they don't talk to each other?
Not initially.
Yeah.
The system calculates them independently and then tries to align them in the final stages of generation. It's computationally heavy and introduces a lot of latency.
So multi-stream is like two chefs cooking in entirely separate kitchens. One is making the broth, the other is making the vegetables, and they just aggressively shove their dishes together at the very end and hope it tastes like a cohesive soup.
That's a perfect way to visualize it. Kriya 2, however, utilizes a single-stream architecture. The attention layers and the processing layers, specifically what they call SWLU MLP layers, are shared natively between the text and the image tokens right from the very first step.
So the single stream is one chef seamlessly cooking a unified stew from the start. Everything simmers in the same pot, which cuts out all that frantic coordination at the end. That explains the speed. But wait, you mentioned SWGLU MLP layers. Let's make sure we don't lose anyone here. How does that contribute to the unified stew?
Well, a standard processing layer in an AI model has a fixed capacity for how much information it can move around at once. A SWGLU MLP layer is dynamic. It has a flexible expansion factor, which in this case is 4x.
Okay, so it scales up?
Exactly. It allows the model to temporarily widen its computational bandwidth when it's dealing with complex relationships between the text and the image, and then shrink back down to save power when the task is simpler.
Oh, that's brilliant. It's like having a highway where extra lanes automatically pave themselves when traffic gets heavy, and then just disappear when it's light.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And what's fascinating here is how they keep all this fast-moving data organized. They implemented a three-dimensional positional encoding system called Axial ROP, which stands for Rotary Position Embedding.
Axial ROP. That sounds like sailing terminology. Break down what a 3D positional encoding system is actually doing for the image.
Imagine giving the AI a GPS coordinate system for every single pixel it creates. Instead of just knowing where a pixel is on a flat X and Y axis height, and with Axial ROP adds a third axis for time or frame sequence.
Oh, so it understands movement.
Yes. The AI inherently understands the spatial relationship of every token across three dimensions. This is why Kriya 2 is so incredibly consistent when you use it to generate multi-frame imagery or short video clips. It doesn't lose track of where objects are supposed to be.
The efficiency of this unified system is just wild. Let's look at the artificial analysis benchmark table from mid-2026. Kriya 2 Turbo hits a 2.0-second average generation time for a native 2K image.
Which is incredibly fast.
Let me put that in perspective for you listening. The only models that are technically faster are FLUX 0.1 Schnell at half a second and Z-Image Turbo at 1.8 seconds. But FLUX 0.1 simply doesn't match Kria's visual fidelity, and Z-Image Turbo is a strictly proprietary paid API model. Like, you can't run it yourself locally.
And the contrast is even more stark if you look at the industry giants. OpenAI's GPT Image 2 currently takes over 3 minutes, 200.8 seconds on average to generate an image on that exact same benchmark.
3 minutes. If you are a designer trying to iterate on a concept, 3 minutes per prompt is an absolute eternity. Why is OpenAI taking so long?
It really comes down to their methodology. OpenAI relies heavily on a multi-step chain of thought process.
Right.
Their system essentially talks to itself, reasoning through the prompt extensively before it ever starts rendering actual pixels. Now, that might yield high semantic accuracy if you type in a chaotic paragraph-long prompt, but the latency makes rapid iterative workflows completely impossible.
Which brings up a fascinating strategic decision Kria made. Because having a blazing fast model is great, but they didn't just release one model. They divided their efforts and released two fundamentally different versions, Kria 2 Raw and Kria 2 Turbo. Why split the ecosystem like that?
Because they understand that handing control back to the user means recognizing that users have vastly different needs. An AI researcher needs raw potential, while a production artist needs speed and efficiency.
Makes sense. So let's break down Kria 2 Raw first. Based on the documentation, this is essentially a blank canvas.
Yes. Kria 2 Raw is a mid-training checkpoint pulled directly from their main training cycle. It has not undergone any aesthetic distillation or safety alignment reinforcement.
None at all.
None. It's latent space. The mathematical universe of possibilities it can draw from is completely neutral.
Meaning, if you type a basic prompt into Raw, you aren't going to get a perfectly lit, symmetrical masterpiece by default. You might get something incredibly weird because it lacks those safety bumpers guiding it toward a quote-unquote good image.
Right, and that lack of bumpers makes it very heavy to run. It requires 52 full inference steps to resolve an image, and it demands hardware with at least 24 gigabytes of VRAM.
To ground that hardware requirement for you, 24 gigs of VRAM means you are not running RAW on a standard gaming laptop. You are either renting expensive cloud GPU space or you've invested in a heavy-duty professional workstation.
Correct. But that unconstrained neutral space is exactly what developers and studios need to train custom LoRa's low-rank adaptations. Because RAW doesn't have a pre-bake house style, it absorbs new aesthetics with incredible fidelity. It doesn't fight you when you try to teach it something new.
Let's clarify LoRa's really quickly. Think of the main Kria model as a highly advanced digital camera. A LoRa's is like a custom snap-on lens filter that you attach to the front of that camera.
I like that.
Right. It's a tiny, lightweight file that forces the camera to shoot in a specific style like vintage film or a specific brand's color palette. You don't have to rebuild the entire camera. You just snap on a different filter.
That's a great analogy. And once you've trained that snap-on filter using the RAW model, you move over to the total opposite end of the spectrum. Kria 2 Turbo.
The mass production engine.
Exactly. Turbo is a distilled, post-trained variant of RAW. Kria achieved this using a technique called trajectory distribution matching, or TDM.
Let me make sure I follow the mechanics of TDM. Is it just taking those 52 inference steps from RAW and arbitrarily dropping frames to speed things up?
Not at all. Dropping steps degrades quality. Imagine the 52-step process as a person slowly walking through a massive, complex hedge maze to find the center.
Okay.
TDM is an algorithm that hovers above the maze, watches the person's entire path, and then calculates how to bulldoze a perfectly straight line directly from the entrance to the center. It maps the complex trajectory and compresses it into a highly efficient mathematical shortcut.
Oh, wow. So it learns the destination and just skips all the trial and error, and that slashes the generation cycle down to just 8 steps.
Yes.
And because it's so efficient, it can run on a standard consumer 16-gigabyte GPU, something like an RTX 4080 that you can just go buy at a normal electronics store.
Which unlocks the ultimate professional workflow. Train on RAW, generate with Turbo.
Let's put this into a real-world scenario so you can see how powerful this control actually is. Imagine you are the creative director of a digital agency, right? You're managing 15 different client accounts. In the past, your designers would waste hours wrestling with prompts, trying to force Midjourney to somehow match a client's specific minimalist style and exact brand colors. It's just a clunky batch process nightmare.
Highly inefficient.
But with Kria 2, your agency uses the heavy workstation to train 15 separate LoRa's on the Kria 2 RAW model. One custom snap-on filter for each client. Then your designers load those tiny LoRa files directly into Krea 2 Turbo running locally on their laptops. Because Turbo gives you a 2K image in 2 seconds, you could literally share your screen in a live video meeting with a client, apply their brand LoRa, and generate dozens of perfectly on-brand assets while they walk.
That changes everything.
Right. When they ask for a tweak, you just iterate in real time. Image generation shifts from a slow overnight rendering job into an interactive, live conversation.
And, you know, Krea also built a bridge for casual users who don't have the time or technical expertise to train custom LoRAs. They integrated a very advanced LLM prompt expander natively into the suite.
This feature is fascinating because it solves that translation gap between human ideas and machine logic. If you type in a simple human idea, like a futuristic city at sunset, the prompt expander completely intercepts it.
Right.
It rewrites your prompt under the hood to include hyper-specific phrases like towering crystalline skyscrapers reflecting prismatic light and volumetric atmospheric haze and physically based materials.
And what's fascinating here is how it preserves your original intent while injecting the technical vocabulary the model understands best. It's trained on synthetic thinking traces, meaning it knows exactly which words trigger the highest quality outputs within the Krea architecture.
So it's basically speaking the model's native language for you.
Exactly. And it actively monitors embedding diversity to ensure it isn't just adding the exact same descriptive words every time, keeping the outputs dynamic rather than repetitive.
So we have a system that gives you control over the data, control over the style, and unmatched speed. You'd think the creative and developer communities would be universally celebrating this. But they aren't. Here's where it gets really interesting. Because a 2 second generation speed is completely useless if using the software gets your company sued.
Very true.
And that friction brings us to the massive debate over Krea's custom license.
The business context is crucial here. Krea was founded back in 2022 by Victor Perez and Diego Rodriguez Prado. Both of them were audiovisual systems engineering dropouts. And they didn't start by building models.
Right. They started as an aggregator.
Yeah, a SaaS aggregator.
Yeah.
They essentially built a beautiful workflow interface on top of APIs from Runway, Midjourney, and Adobe.
They raised an impressive $83 million from heavy hitters like Andreessen Horowitz and Bain Capital. But if you are just a shiny interface relying on someone else's engine, you are incredibly vulnerable.
It's exactly. To insulate themselves from supplier margin pressures and platform risk, they aggressively pivoted into becoming foundational model builders themselves. We saw early iterations of this with FLUX.1, Krea, and Realtime 14B, and their push into enterprise integration has been undeniably successful.
We have to mention the Superside case study here. Superside is a major design service, and they migrated their workflows entirely to Krea. They reported that their asset production time dropped by 65% and their API costs were cut in half compared to juggling different proprietary models.
Furthermore, Krea partnered with Henning Larsen, which is a prominent European architecture firm. They worked together to build domain-specific design tools tuned to meet the strict compliance frameworks of the EU AI Act.
Which is notoriously strict.
Very. And this proved to the enterprise market that Krea can navigate complex, high-risk regulatory environments.
Which sets the stage for the Krea 2 Community License Agreement. Let's look at the rules they laid out. If you are an individual creator or a small business operating with under 50 seats, the open weights are completely free. No royalties, and you, the user, own the copyright to whatever images you generate.
However, if you scale beyond that 50-seat threshold, or if you need enterprise features like single sign-on or custom data processing agreements, you fall outside the free tier and must negotiate a custom commercial contract.
Tiered pricing based on company size is standard practice. That isn't what sparked the controversy at all. The firestorm is entirely about the safety mandate woven into the license.
Yes, because traditional open source licenses like MIT or Apache 2.0 grant unconditional usage rights. Once you download the software, it is yours to do with as you please, and the creator waives all liability.
Right.
The Krea 2 community license, however, implements strict downstream behavioral guardrails.
It explicitly states that any developer or platform hosting Krea 2 models must implement host-level content moderation. You are legally bound by contract to filter out illegal materials, non-consensual intimate imagery, and child sexual abuse material. If you build an app using Krea 2 and fail to implement those safety layers, you are in immediate breach of contract. Krea can and will revoke your license to use the model entirely.
The CREA legal team stated this philosophy very plainly in their launch documentation. They said, "We want to open the technology, but we don't want to make it unaccountable. Safety responsibility must be distributed across the entire value chain."
As we promised at the top of the deep dive, we are looking at this impartially because both sides of this debate are deeply entrenched. On one side, you have the open source purists. Their argument is straightforward. Conditional licensing inherently violates the fundamental philosophy of software freedom.
Yeah, to a purist, if a corporation retains the power to revoke your access based on how you use the tool, it simply isn't open source. It's just a free trial with strings attached.
Exactly. On the opposing side, you have the pragmatists. They argue that the reputational and legal risks of unregulated AI imagery in 2026 are simply too massive for a company to ignore. They point back to the intense legal scrutiny surrounding earlier permissive licenses, like Stable Diffusion.
Right. There were massive lawsuits.
The pragmatists argue that without these explicit, legally binding guardrails, the entire technology faces the existential threat of being shut down entirely by global regulators.
And this raises an important question regarding the future architecture of accountability. CREA is effectively executing a hybrid maneuver here. They are relinquishing centralized control over the model weights, allowing you to run it locally, but they were legally shifting the burden of safety and compliance directly onto you, the downstream deployer.
It's a massive shift in liability. So what does this all mean for you? CREA 2 undeniably represents a staggering technological leap forward. The unified efficiency of the single-stream architecture, the aesthetic freedom of the zero-synthetic data policy, and the raw two-second speed of the turbo model provide a highly viable middle path.
It really does.
It sits perfectly between the pure, unrestricted open source models that struggle to survive financially and the locked down proprietary giants like OpenAI that basically restrict your creative control.
But having superior technology doesn't guarantee a victory. The ultimate survival of CREA 2 hinges entirely on community adoption. Will independent developers, hobbyists, and professional studios actually invest the thousands of hours required to build out a robust, interconnected ecosystem of customized LoRAs and fine tunes around that raw checkpoint?
If the community embraces it, CREA 2 could easily trigger the kind of massive network effect we saw in the early days of open image generation. But if developers balk at the restrictive license, it might just remain a very fast, very impressive niche tool.
Which leaves us with a final, rather provocative thought to consider. We noted earlier that CREA partnered with European firms to ensure compliance with the EU AI Act. As global regulations continue to tighten their grip on generative technologies, this open but conditional licensing model may not just be a choice CREA made to protect themselves.
You think it could become the standard?
It might rapidly become the mandatory blueprint for the entire industry. If forcing the downstream deployer to assume the legal liability of content moderation is the only way a company can legally survive offering open weights, we might be witnessing the permanent end of pure open source AI as we know it. And that shift will fundamentally change who has the resources to innovate and who holds the power in the next decade of creative technology.
That is definitely something to mull over. It takes that amazing two-second image generation and puts it into a much heavier, much more consequential context. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into CREA 2. Keep exploring the tools, keep questioning the mechanics behind them, and we'll be right here to help you navigate this rapidly shifting landscape.